2000, when Pia De Jong's daughter Charlotte was born, it was immediately clear that something was wrong. There were blue spots on her body, spots that Pia soon learned were tumors. Shortly thereafter, Charlotte was diagnosed with acute myeloid leukemia, a rare and deadly form of cancer. Pia and her husband were told to prepare for the worst. In Saving Charlotte, A Mother and the Power of Intuition, published by W.W. Norton & Company, Pia De Jong chronicles how she grappled with this illness and why she and her husband decided not to pursue chemotherapy, and how Charlotte, against all odds, survived. I spoke with Pia De Jong in January, and we are rebroadcasting that conversation for you now. You start the book in Amsterdam in 1995. Why then? Why there?
I started the book because it gives such a good idea of the environment, the way we live, the whole neighborhood, which plays an enormous important role in the situation when we eventually had to deal with a sick baby.
It was like a storybook place, I found. It felt like a fairy tale where you actually live on this street where across the street is a prostitute living.
Yes.
And she becomes very enmeshed in your life. So tell me about some of the characters you lived with.
Yeah, so it is, I think in a certain way, Amsterdam is a little bit like a fairy tale with the canals, and it has this feel of centuries ago, and it really is a very big mixture of interesting characters. And we lived on the Herengracht, which is one of the chicest canals, but on the alley next to us, the Korsche Sportsteeg, there was a little bit of prostitution, and across our window, and it was very close, there was a brothel, and in the typical Amsterdam way, with hookers sitting, you know, behind the curtain and closing and opening the curtain all the time. And that was somebody who, when, you know, I first had my first child, of course, and then when he was sitting in front of the window and he was like, you know, just starting to talk, he asked this question like, "Mom, why is this lady always sitting there in her underwear? And why is she closing always and opening always the curtains?" So that was part of our lives. And in the beginning, I didn't pay much attention to these people because I was working and I was engaging all kind of stuff. But when, you know, when eventually our daughter was born and was sick, these people became very important. There was also the person who took care of the playground across the canal, who was a kind of a way that he had an alcohol problem, and there was this program from the government to help these people back on their feet. And so he became the protector of this place, this little park. And he was grumpy and and, you know, especially on Mondays, he kind of smelled of beer. But he also became very important, you know, when eventually I ended up being at home with a sick baby.
Yeah, it's really a story about the communities you create, especially when you're creating a family. So you had two sons and then you had your daughter, Charlotte.
Yeah.
And immediately you noticed something was different. Why?
Yeah, So we in Holland, most of us still give birth at home. So
sounds amazing.
Yeah, now I live in the United States and I think like, oh, how did I even think about doing that? Why? But the idea is that we still do it, and they always tell us like in 10 minutes you can reach a hospital if needed, which would be a problem actually because we lived on the fifth floor. And this was this round staircase.
Waddling down.
But everything was fine, and I did it with my sons, and it worked out well. And it's really private and intimate. So you're this midwife, and in your own bed. It's kind of a very nice, non-medical, non-invasive way of giving birth. For me, it worked perfectly well. You're very relaxed. I was. And when my daughter was born, I immediately saw that she was kind of tiny, and she was not thriving. And indeed, the midwife saw that there was a little strange spot on her back, and she pushed it and it turned blue. And immediately I thought, like, this is wrong. This is not a good thing. And
that actually, must be terrifying.
It was terrifying. And I remember she went home and we kind of snuggled in the bed, and the boys, you know, woke up and we were living with his family. And suddenly I said to my husband, why don't you check out on the computer whether this could be leukemia?
You immediately thought.
Yeah. I just sent him to, you know, get your computer and check this out. I have no medical background, I have no idea. And he was checking like little spots on the backs and whatever, legs. And of course he didn't find anything, because this is a very, thank God, it's a very rare form of leukemia, and especially for newborns. But that was the situation.
So when did you realize it was leukemia? How did that come about?
Yeah, so for in Holland, when something doesn't solve itself, after 2 weeks, you're told to go to the hospital. So we went for a biopsy, and then we got the result of the biopsy. And that was when we were told that she was very, very sick. And what you just said, that we had to prepare for the worst, that she didn't have much chance of survival, because leukemia has high survival rate when treated well, but this form, she had the myeloid leukemia, because it's in your blood, it's just the most dangerous form.
And your reaction, your doctor noticed your reaction because it was different than the reactions he'd seen before. How?
Well, in the original, when we first heard it, I felt I didn't want to hear it. I felt like, who are you having this opinion on my child? I mean, I carried her for 9 months. I know best about my child. Who are you telling me this? I just couldn't handle that. It was just too much, too invasive. And I just want to go outside with my husband and pretend that nothing was the matter. I just walked out of that room. I just kind of away. I just needed the privacy of my intimate life.
Did you and your husband react the same way?
Well, my husband is a scientist, and he wants to know the facts, and he asked all these questions. But he had the same feeling of, let's go out of there and recover in your privacy of, you know, an intimacy of your home, and then try to figure out what's going on. And then later we went to see, you know, we became in this whole medical circuit, and we had official discussion with oncologists.
And what did they say?
Well, and then I had this reaction, probably the same reaction, when we were told exactly what was the situation and that there wasn't much to do except the only thing that was available, which is chemotherapy. This was the year 2000. Well, that's also in my book. I just kind of walked out of this whole hospital situation, and my husband followed me. I just didn't want to go with that. It just felt completely not right for me to have this beautiful little girl that was sick and needed what I felt, peace and quiet, to have her parachuted into this whole medical situation. This was after she had done like a bone marrow biopsy, and she was hospitalized for some nights, and she was confused, and I was getting confused.
When you left, were you expecting that you were taking her home to die?
Yeah, at that time we were expecting to take her home to die, and I wanted her to die at home with the, you know, her brothers, the whole family, in the complete, probably in the room where I gave birth to her, in the complete privacy of our own place. And I thought that to be the best way to prepare everybody for what was, you know, going to happen.
What did the doctors say was going to happen, or did they not know?
Well, they did not know. They said that at a certain point she would, you know, become very pale and spit up blood, and it would be a very painful, sad thing. But of course, they said, like, we have no idea how long it will take, but it will deteriorate. So it was a very difficult, sad situation. So So we took her home, and we just waited for the worst to come. Except that we didn't know how long it would take. And we were,
What happens to time them? You're just waiting for something to happen. You don't know when it will happen. You don't know what it will be. It must completely change your sense of time.
It did. And when you have little children, it's already difficult to have a proper sense of time. Because they, you know, three kids are all under 4 years of, you know, old. And
it's a lot.
Yeah. So they sleep, they eat, you know, you nap. I napped with them. So my feeling of time was already a little bit confused. But yeah, this was the thing that, you know, I didn't know when and what was going to happen. But yeah, so we waited, and actually nothing happened. And I just started to get a little bit nervous. Like, I have to prepare for like a funeral, and I have to prepare my boys. I have to see a psychiatrist who is, you know, knowledgeable about, you know, grief with little kids. So,
and no one knows what to tell you. I mean, you go and you look for a gravestone even.
No. Because that's also strange, because I was going to this graveyard with Charlotte, my daughter, on my, you know, in the sling. And then they asked, like, who is it for? And, you know, what do you say? It's terrible. It was very confusing. But then something changed in my mind, which was that for some reason somebody knocked on my door and gave me a little stone and said, it was kind of a crystal. And he hung it in front of my window and it took all the lights. And he just came in and out and he said, like, don't prepare for death, but enjoy her life. And it was just such a change of mind for me.
It flipped the whole idea of what you were doing.
Thing, yeah. So I started to enjoy her life and every day, actually. And yeah.
It's funny because you're really good at talking about how other people responded to this illness. You talk about the morbid curiosity disguised as empathy. And I loved that because I feel like when you're sick, you get a lot of that. You talk about Peter, one of the fathers of your other kids' friends. What did he say to you?
Well, Peter was the one who was very pushy on sending me to some alternative oncologist. So Holland is very close to Germany and they are big in all this alternative, you know, I think it's Quakery, but whatever things they have to heal cancer. And people can be so pushy. They can be making you feel guilty if you don't do what they tell you to do. It's very annoying. And it's especially for us, because I really, really try to safeguard my own privacy and my, everything, my spiritual connection to the family. And since somebody is getting through little hooks and nooks and trying to make you feel worse about yourself. And that's actually something that people who read my book reacted to. Like you say, it's when you're dealing in with a situation like that, people are really pushy and playing on your guilt.
When did you know that Charlotte was going to be okay?
Well, so for quite a while, she was not thriving at all and just a fragile, tiny baby. So her brothers tried to, make her happy and sing songs. They were really, really sweet to her. And she was still always like laying there quiet. And then suddenly I saw she wanted to make an effort to become part of the fun. And that was actually when she reacted to her brothers and playing more. And also, in the beginning, she had just one tumor, but she developed more and more tumors. She was actually kind of blue all over. She was all having all these. That was in a very, very
extreme,
unnerving, extreme situation. They were beautiful. I described them in my book as like little lakes, and they were perfectly beautiful color of blue. They weren't disgusting. They were sweet and lovely, but at the same time, they were tumors.
Dangerous
and full of blood that was sick. So I saw that she changed and become more thriving. She gained a little bit of weight and she tried to, walk and stand up. And then as a big surprise, actually, her oldest brother tried to teach her to to walk. And as a surprise, he kind of, was standing there and I had to watch, and she was able to stand on her feet. So she was close to a year when she was actually healed.
And how old is she now?
She's now 17.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. She had a driver's license and she's doing well. I think if you beat something like that on your own, she's strong. I think she's the strongest in the
family. How does she think of the story?
I think for her, the story was really an eye opener, because she was always new. We never kept it a secret that she was sick as a baby. She never quite understood it. And it made her understand what had happened to her and why everybody was so caring and everybody's always asking about her. So she's very happy that I wrote down the story. It makes her understand her own life.
I have been speaking with the novelist Pia DeYoung. Her memoir, her first book in English, is Saving Charlotte, A Mother and the Power of Intuition. Thank you so much for joining me today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.